Hello, and welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona, broadcast of Yuma Digest. This is your volunteer broadcaster, Sue Madison, bringing you recent selections from this week's Yuma Sun newspaper. I'll read the cover stories, local stories, and obituaries, followed by sports. Our first article is titled, Unanimous Ruling Upholds Early Deadline for Minor Party Candidates, by Howard Fisher, dated September 23rd, Phoenix. A federal appeals court on Friday upheld an Arizona law requiring minor parties to qualify for the ballot at least 6 months before the primary if they hope to run any candidates. In a unanimous ruling, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rebuffed claims by the Arizona Green Party that a February deadline to submit petitions is unconstitutional. Judge Margaret McCune said attorneys for the party never demonstrated any significant burden on its rights. Conversely, McCune said that deadlines served Arizona's important interest in administering orderly elections. There was no immediate response from Claudia Elquist, co-chair of the party, who was one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. The legal dispute stems from state election laws spelling out how parties get a space on the ballot for their candidates. Any party which gets at least 5% of the vote in the prior election is automatically qualified. So are those who have a certain number of people registered with the party. The Green Party met neither burden for the 2014 election. There is another option. Collect petitions signed by at least 1.33% of the total votes cast for governor at the last general election, a figure that translated out to 23,401 signatures. But the law requires they be turned in 180 days before the primary, a deadline that fell on February 27th. Attorneys for the party filed suit, saying that date is one of the earliest deadlines in the country. They also noted that until 2000, the deadline was in May. The early deadline is unduly burdensome and invidiously discriminatory and not designed to allow a reasonable, diligent minor party organization to qualify for the ballot, wrote attorney Robert Barnes for the party. But McCune said there was something missing in all that evidence. For example, we do not know how difficult it was for the Green Party to collect the required signatures, how much the signature gathering effort cost, and whether petition efforts diverted the party's resources from other endeavors, she wrote. McCune also said the party never backed up its claim that voters are not focused on the election at the time of the February deadline, or even whether the party had in fact tried to comply with earlier deadline. Without any evidence regarding the practical consequences of the deadline, we find ourselves in the position of Lady Justice, blindfolded and stuck holding empty scales, she wrote, citing earlier Ninth Circuit rulings upholding various election laws and deadlines. What that leaves, McCune said, are the claims by the state election officials that they need the time. Our next article is titled, Federal Judge Refuses to Block Ballot Harvesting Law, by Howard Fisher, Capital Media Services, dated September 23rd, Phoenix. Saying it doesn't place an undue burden on voters, a federal judge on Friday refused to block the state from enforcing its controversial law against ballot harvesting this coming election. U.S. District Court Judge Douglas Reyes acknowledged that limiting who a voter can give his or her completed early ballot to for delivery might cause an inconvenience, but he said that hardly infringes on the person's rights, given all the other options for voting, both in person and by mail. Reyes also did not dispute arguments by challengers that there are no confirmed cases of fraud from ballot harvesting. The judge said, however, the state does not have to provide such proof. He said the mere fact that absentee voting presents a greater opportunity for fraud is sufficient justification for the restriction. And Reyes said the state's interests in ensuring fair election gives lawmakers fairly broad latitude in enacting what he said are minimal restrictions like these. Friday's order does not end the legal fight. Instead, Reyes simply refused to enjoin election officials from enforcing the law while the case makes its way through the legal system, a process that could take months or longer. But the judge also said it is unlikely the challengers will succeed in their claims even after a full trial. There is another option. Challengers, led by the Arizona Democratic Party, can ask the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for an expedited review of Reyes' ruling ahead of the election, but time is working against them with early ballots set to go out October 12th. Friday's ruling is a victory for Republican Secretary of State Michelle Reagan, who was the prime force behind the law which makes it a felony to collect someone else's voted or unvoted ballot, punishable by a year in state prison. Reagan actually acknowledged a partisan reason behind the measure. Speaking earlier this year at the annual Conservative Political Action Conference, before the measure even had been approved, Reagan said the outrageous loophole in Arizona law is easy to cheat. And she said it is the radical left who uses ballot harvesting. State GOP Chairman Robert Graham, in a statement issued Friday, echoed the theme. Ballot harvesting is a practice used by the Democrats and their leftist allies in Arizona that was rife with opportunity for manipulation and outright fraud, he said. And Graham, like Republican lawmakers who pushed the measure, said the absence of any proof of fraud is irrelevant. The ruling drew the opposite reaction from the other side of the aisle. Unlike the state Republican leadership, the Arizona Democratic Party does not believe that it should be a crime for one neighbor to help another neighbor vote, said Sheila Healy, the party's executive director. The measure was clearly partisan, with only one Republican in the entire legislature voting against it. That did not go unnoticed by Senator Steve Farley, D. Tucson. The problem we're solving is that one party is better at collecting ballots than the other one, he said during Senate debate. The other tried and they failed, Farley continued, and therefore it's time to change the rules. Among the claims of the challengers is that the law significantly increases the burdens of voting. Reyes said that's not the case. It does not eliminate or restrict any method of voting, he wrote. It merely limits who may possess, and therefore return, a voter's early ballot. The judge said those who requested and received early ballots can return them themselves, either in person or by mail. And he noted that even under the new law, voters still can give their ballots to family members, those living in the same household, and caregivers. Reyes also noted other laws designed to ease voting, including requirements to personally deliver ballots to those too ill or disabled to get to polling places, and requirements that employers give workers time off to vote. Evidence indicates that many voters who entrust their ballots to collectors do so not out of necessity, but for convenience or because they prefer a trusted volunteer to deliver their ballots, the judge wrote. And he said for many voters, the impact of the new law results from a matter of preference or choice rather than state-created obstacle, and therefore is not a substantial burden. Reyes also brushed aside claims by challengers that the law will impose severe burdens on rural voters who lack reliable transportation or access to secure outgoing mail. It is telling that they have not produced a single declaration from a voter who fits this profile, the judge wrote. He also rebuffed a separate claim that the law violates the Voting Rights Act, which prohibits states from enacting changes in election laws that has a disparate impact on minorities. Challengers said Hispanic, Native American, and African American voters are more likely to rely on others to collect and return their early ballots. But Reyes said that argument lacks one thing: actual quantitative or statistical evidence. Without this information, the court cannot compare the impact of the law on different demographic populations, nor can it determine whether the differences, if any, are statistically relevant, he wrote. Anyway, the judge said, if much of the problem created is for rural voters, that's hardly evidence of unfair racial impact. He said there are many rural communities where white voters are the majority. Our next article is titled, Sunset Community Health Center to Hold Kids Care Enrollment Fairs, by Rachel Two Guns, dated September 26th. In light of Kids Care Children's Health Insurance Program recently being reinstated in the state, Sunset Community Health Center, SCHC, will be holding enrollment and resource fairs free to the community during the coming weeks. In May, Governor Doug Ducey signed legislation to allow Arizona to accept federal funding to restart the Kids Care program. The measure is to provide coverage to families earning between 138% and 200% of the federal poverty level. Kids Care returned to Arizona in July, and coverage began for the first group that enrolled on September 1st. The Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, or AHCCCS, pronounced ACCESS, offers health insurance through Kids Care. The Arizona Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, for eligible children under age 19 who are not eligible for other ACCESS health insurance. Adriana Del Rio, Outreach and Enrollment Specialist with Sunset Community Health Center, said that although there are no current local numbers on the amount of children that are eligible for Kids Care, she said it is estimated that 30,000 children under the age of 19 are eligible for this type of insurance in the state of Arizona. I feel that a lot of families are going to be relieved that Kids Care came back, because Kids Care targets those families that are not eligible for access, Del Rio said. They are over income, but they don't make enough money to pay for private insurance because it's very pricey. It targets all those families, and it's a lot of families here in Yuma County because a lot of the middle class fall in that gray area. Del Rio noted that as of September 1st, ACCESS has reported that 2,819 children are now enrolled in Kids Care. From August to September, Rio says the change in enrollment was 2,291, a 434% increase. Given the estimate of 30,000 eligible children, significant progress was made during the first month of Kids Care being available, Del Rio said. According to Del Rio, there will be trained and certified staff that will provide free in-person enrollment and application assistance and free health screening to adults. Free health screenings that will be offered are for cholesterol, blood pressure, height and weight, and BMI. Additionally, applicants that seek services should bring proof of citizenship, proof of immigration status, a Social Security card, proof of residency or residential address, and proof of income to complete the application. The fairs will take place at Harvest Preparatory Academy, located at 350 East 18th Street, on the following dates and times: Wednesday, September 28th, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 5th, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, October 13th, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, October 27th, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 2nd, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. For more information, call 928-373-5724. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Sue Madison, reading selections from the Yuma Sun newspaper. Our next article is titled, Local Reviews of Debate Show Lingering Issues, by Matt Harding, Yuma Sun staff writer, dated September 26th. Is she prepared or does she lack stamina? Is he a job creator or a bully? And should there be other options on the debate stage? Local party leaders discussed some of those topics with the Yuma Sun on Monday night before and after the U.S. presidential debate between former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and billionaire businessman Donald Trump. Arizona State Representative Charlene Fernandez, D. Yuma, said she was a bit surprised by Trump being so ill-prepared. He seemed like a bully, she said, adding that Trump jumped on both Clinton and debate moderator Lester Holt. It just showed us that Hillary Clinton is ready to lead. Fernandez, who was watching the debate with a large group in Phoenix, said that Clinton touched on something close to home for her, which is wasting money on private prisons. During the debate, Fernandez wrote on her Twitter page, "Do away with private prisons on the state level, too. Thank you, Secretary Clinton. Hashtag I'm with her." Fernandez also echoed Clinton's call for Trump to release his tax returns, saying it's become a protocol of sorts and what presidential candidates have done in the past. She said Clinton made her case, but thinks everyone who supports her will continue to do so, just like those who support Trump. I can't imagine they, the American public, would be sitting on the fence at this point, Fernandez said. I don't think it changed anybody's mind. Jonathan Lines, chairman of the Yuma County Republican Central Committee, said that he thought jobs, national defense, and law enforcement were the key topics discussed at the debate. Though it was hard to focus on what some of their final answers were due to the back and forth between the candidates, Lines thought Trump's ideas on how to bring manufacturing jobs back into the country was especially important. Lines recounted Trump's comments about how, by reducing the corporate tax, more businesses and manufacturers will choose to stay in the United States. Trump added that many manufacturers will come back to the U.S. if tariffs are imposed on their goods coming into the country. The U.S. has the third highest corporate tax rate in the world at 39%, behind only Chad and the United Arab Emirates, according to the Tax Foundation. Lines said this specifically has an impact in the manufacturing sector. He also discussed terrorism and law enforcement. I'm most discouraged by where we are in relationship to national defense, said Lines, noting a Breitbart, Texas report today that discussed leaked FBI documents regarding terrorism encounters along the U.S.-Mexico border, including in Arizona. Trump will honor and sustain the laws of the land, he said, adding that that's the reason why law enforcement officers support him. Like Fernandez, Lines didn't necessarily think the debate chartered into new territory, but he said they set the stage for the next two presidential debates. They're just warming up. Martin Porches, the Yuma County Democratic Party president, said job creation is his most important issue, and he was glad there was discussion about that and small businesses. But Porches also noted that the conversation about infrastructure is something that hits close to home in Yuma County, where roads are always a great topic of concern. He said that modernizing infrastructure in places all over the country, like Yuma County, is important. It creates lots of jobs and puts a lot of people to work. Porches said he was also glad that the debate touched on race and police relations. We need more of that, he said, citing that during his time as mayor of Somerton, he worked with the police department to ensure officers patrolled the business corridor by foot and interacted with people in their everyday life. However, despite those topics of discussion, Porteous said he was disappointed by the back-and-forth fighting and blaming. "We need to move forward and tackle things moving forward," he said. "Pointing fingers and talking about who made a mistake leads us nowhere." Russ Clark, the Republican chairman of the Yuma County Board of Supervisors, said that both candidates sidetracked into personal issues. "I think debates spend too much time about talking about what isn't important," said Clark, adding that the moderator and Clinton both seemed to go up against Trump, who did not handle it as well as he should have. Clark was upset that more time was spent on the President Obama birther issue that affects nobody than on Clinton wanting to raise business taxes and other issues. He said Trump fell for Hillary's bait and spent too much time defensively over-explaining things. "When you go unchallenged, it's accepted as a fair comment," Clark said. "The voters and the citizens are not getting a true picture of what the candidates stand for." But not all of the presidential candidates were on the debate stage Monday night. Howard Blitz, chair of the Yuma County Libertarian Party, made a prediction before the debate. "You're going to see one bad-mouthing the other one," he said. "It's not really going to be a debate." Blitz rhetorically asked why Democrats and Republicans were afraid to have his candidate, former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson, on the debate stage. Johnson, who is on the ballot in all 50 states like Clinton and Trump, was excluded from the first debate because he polled at 8.4% nationally, failing to meet the 15% criteria of the Commission on Presidential Debates, the nonprofit formed in 1987 that is currently co-chaired by a Democrat and a Republican. Blitz called the 15% requirement arbitrary, adding that the Democrats and Republicans have a monopoly on the debates. "I think he would shed a lot more light on the subject matter at hand," Blitz said of Johnson. "It's too bad the American people aren't going to hear what this guy has to say." In 1992, Reform Party candidate Ross Perot debated with Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush, despite polling at 8% nationally at the time, a contention pointed out by many libertarians after Johnson wasn't included in Monday's debate. Nonetheless, both Johnson and Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate who is on the ballot in 45 states and polled at about 3% nationally, continue to aim for the 15% threshold in time for the next debates held on October 9th and October 19th. Our next article is titled, "No-Show Jurors Hinder Yuma County Superior Court," by James Gilbert, dated September 26, 2016. According to Yuma County Superior Court jury manager Enrique Rodriguez, people aren't responding to jury poll questionnaires, and the problem is getting worse. Rodriguez said since slightly more than half of all jury pool questionnaires are typically ever returned, the jury office has recently had to increase the number of forms it sends out every 6 months from 10,000 to 15,000 in order to ensure there are enough potential jurors in the jury pool. "We have a problem, and it is people aren't showing interest in jury duty. If there aren't enough jurors, you can't proceed with a trial," Rodriguez said. "There have been times that not enough people reported for jury duty that we have had to conduct emergency summonses using the telephone. Having to send out so many questionnaires so a large number of no-shows won't keep a trial from going forward is expensive." Rodriguez said that it costs the Yuma County taxpayers more than $28,000 a year for the jury office to mail out questionnaires. "Even if you do fill out your questionnaire and send it back," Rodriguez said, "people shouldn't ignore the actual summons to jury duty when it gets sent to you. Please take it seriously and come in when summoned," Rodriguez said. "There are consequences to not showing up." Rodriguez said the judges in Yuma County Superior Court are extremely concerned about the situation and have the discretion, if necessary, to become more proactive in trying to hold those who ignore the jury duty accountable. While the law allows people who are 75 years or older and those who have been selected for jury duty within the past 2 years to avoid jury service, Rodriguez said the law requires everyone to fill out the jury questionnaire. Failure to do so, he added, is punishable by up to a $500 fine, as well as being ordered to complete jury duty at a later date. A judge can also find someone in contempt of court and have them jailed until they fill out the form. While it may seem harsh, Rodriguez said the court can send those who ignore their questionnaire a summons to appear before the judge on their own, or it can also issue an order of body attachment, which is kind of an equivalent of a warrant, and have them brought before the court by a sheriff deputy. In one such instance, Superior Court Judge Larry Kenworthy recently issued summonses for 4 jury duty shirkers to appear before him in what is referred to in legal terms as a hearing to show cause to explain why they should not be held in contempt of court. These are jurors who appeared, were sworn in, and told to come back at a specific date and time, but did not do so, Rodriguez said. Jury clerk Lynette Molina said the jury questionnaire form can be filled out in a matter of minutes and must be returned to the jury office within 10 days, either in person, by mail, or by filling it out on the court's website.